You're listening to Spokespeople.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Zoe.
And this is Sarah.
And we're part of the team that hosts the Spokespeople storytelling events.
This is the podcast of the true stories told live at our monthly storytelling shows in the San Francisco Bay Area.
The story that you are about to hear, which will hold you on the edge of your seat, told by Quentin Meckie, comes from our January show at the House of Duke in Berkeley. The theme for the night was scars.
It was very much a nail biter.
Don't bite your nails.
Don't do that.
But enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yay!
Quentin Meckie is originally from Philadelphia. He has honed his storytelling skills, working in local and state politics in a career that included trying to legalize marijuana in California. He believes that the willingness to share a story is equally important as the skills at telling it. Please welcome Quentin.
I mean, if we're in Berkeley and legalizing marijuana, I can't get a little bit of applause. I don't know. That line just kind of sits right out there. I was inspired by your story. I was thinking of a different story to tell, and I had planned on that, but then you started talking about the nature and all that excitement, and I got a little riled up about the whole idea. And the joy about scars is the fact that they come in so many different shapes and sizes. There's psychological scars, there's physical scars, there's internal scars, there's external scars, and there's nature scars. And this is a nature scar story. So when I was 24, I was living in Alaska, and I was having a grand old time. We were in Prince William Sound in Whittier, Alaska. Now, Whittier, Alaska has about 10 people in it, and there's not much else to Whittier, Alaska. And at that time, the only way you could get to Whittier, Alaska was either by train or by boat. So over the course of that summertime when I was living in Alaska, I thought, this is fantastic. And there were 5 glaciers that you could hike to, climb slash whatever. And so a friend and I, who shared the same day off from the boat that we were working on, we made our goal over the course of that summertime that we would actually get to each of the 5 glaciers and touch the face of the glacier. That's what counted at 24. You couldn't just see the glacier. You couldn't get near it. You actually had to physically touch it. That made sense to us at that time. So in early August that year, we decided to go out. And in Alaska, for those of you who have not been, in the summertime, it rains, unlike here, all the time. And so it's actually really never particularly nice out in the summertime. It's foggy, it's rainy, it's still gorgeous, but it's just not the same as having a sunny day. That day in particular happened to be really sunny, perfect, amazing day. And we decided, for me, was my 5th of the 5 glaciers. This is my moment for the summertime. I was very excited. And in the appropriate way that only nature can foreshadow, the glacier's name was Shakespeare Glacier. Yes, exactly. And so you could sense the impending drama to come. And so we decided, we headed off, and it's a beautiful sunny day. It was absolutely amazing. We're all packed up. You know, in the summertime, there's, you know, 13, 14 hours of daylight, if not more. The sun hardly ever goes down. So you never have to, you know, worry about coming home late at night or otherwise. So we hike, and we get to the base of the glacier. And we're all very excited. And we're, oh, yeah, we touch the glacier. We take some, you know, photographs. We're very excited about this idea. And we climb up onto the top of the glacier. And at that point, you know, my friend says, oh, yeah, I'm just gonna relax. Let's have some lunch. This is awesome. Now, for those of you, if you've never been to the face of a glacier, they are massive. And as the glacier comes down a valley, it actually pushes up the mountainside, and it's called the moraine that's on the side. So there's huge sort of rock walls up the side of each of the glaciers as they come down. So for whatever reason, I saw my friend laying there. He's eating his lunch. He's all happy. He's like, man, we did it. You know, like, look at this. Like, we finally achieved our final glacier. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm not so sure I'm done yet. So I had in my mind, as I looked up onto this ridge, I could see this rock outcropping. And I thought, that's where I want to have lunch. That's where I can see myself. That's exactly what's going to happen for me. You have your lunch down here. I'm actually going in for the full view. So I start to climb and free climb up the side and the rock face on my way up to the top of that moraine. And I'm probably about halfway up, And, you know, some of these things you couldn't make up if you tried, because he literally then says to me, dude, seriously, don't kill yourself. Awkward. What do you know that I don't know about this moment? So I start to scramble further up, and I'm thinking, oh, this is fine. I get so close. I can see it. And, you know, I'm about 40 feet up. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And there's this one last handhold just so close. And that's my last moment to get up and on the top and have my little seat and eat my lunch. And I make a pass at it, and I miss. And I catch myself, and I have, as we've all had in our lives, called a moment. And the reason why you have moments is because you have an opportunity to reflect. Is this actually something I would like to continue doing? Or maybe that moment is trying to tell you, it's okay to turn back. And of course, at 24, I only heard one answer, which was, dude, you got this. Easy. You got this. No worries, man. Just boom, one more pass. You grab that rock. You're up, dude. It's done. So I told myself. So I made one big push, grabbed the rock, and the rock gave way. And then I didn't remember anything. And I woke up. And I woke up on a ledge. And I woke up and I was looking up. And I could tell I heard my friend screaming my name. And there was a ledge. And so he's down here. And you could see, he couldn't see. He saw me fall, but didn't actually see where I landed. He actually couldn't see me. And so I kind of, oh man. And there's just shards of teeth in my mouth, and I'm just like this, and everything's ha ha. So from my landing, I had shattered my jaw, I broke my eye, my nose, my shoulder, and some ribs from landing and falling down the rock face. And thankfully, I was wearing a red t-shirt. Because of have I not been wearing a red t-shirt, I probably would have gone into shock by how much blood was everywhere, because it was just pouring down everything. And I was just like, oh, oh, and I'm trying to comprehend what's happening. And he's screaming my name. And I realize, as does he, I still have to get down. I'm actually not down. And that was what sort of dawns on me at this moment. And I realize, okay, let's just take stock of reality right now. Things are not going well. And I kind of sit up, my shoulder's kind of useless, and it's just like everything is just like boom, 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 and I am just trying to comprehend what is happening. I look around, and I look over the edge. He looks at me with this look like, holy shit! And there's nothing he can do. I mean, this is Alaska in the 90s. There's no cell phone. There's nothing, right? The rules of Alaska are if you play the game, then you're going to live by the rules and sort of what happens, right? And so I'm trying to figure out a way down. I don't know a way down. So I start to slide face out on the thing, trying to grab things as I can. And he's looking at me. I know he's looking at me. And I look at his face, and he's like, dude, he's going to fall again. You know, you can just tell when someone's looking at you being like, he was waiting for me to fall again. The only thing I kept repeating over and over again, and I'm not a God-fearing person, but I was that day, was, God, please don't let me fall again. Because I realized at that point, I actually don't think I could have handled it. You know, I think I was at my breaking point at this point, and all it was taking absolutely everything I had to survive that very particular moment. And if I fell again and hit the whole thing conscious, that's a whole different story than waking up and having it already had happened. So I slide down the face of the mountain, and by some miracle along this thing, I don't fall again. I kind of, you know, crumble in front of him. And then I realize at that point what I looked like, because he wouldn't look at me. He looked at me once and then would do this. And he would be like, hey, dude, we need to go that way. We need to keep walking that way. And I was like, Bruce, Bruce, like Bruce. And he was like, dude, you know, and I realized I'm standing there and I'm making puddles everywhere I stand. You know, I'm just like, Bruce, you know. And so there, we're not at the trailhead. And I realized, you know, it's a 4.5 hour walk back. And there's no one who's going to come get us. And so there, Shakespeare Glacier happens to be right next to Portage Lake, and there's Portage Glacier. Portage Glacier happens to be, I think, the most visited glacier in all of Alaska, solely because Portage Lake has a long inlet that goes back to a main inlet that goes to Anchorage. And so people, day tourists, come and they take a boat and they go around the lake and they come back around. So we start to walk to the edge of the lake, and thankfully, you know, I'm just kind of walking down, like, you know, I just try. I mean, there's shards of teeth that I'm just like, and we get to the edge of the lake and we see there's the boat coming, and so I'm like, woo, yes, victory is mine. There is the boat, and the boat starts to come closer, and as it comes around the edge of the lake, and we are literally on the edge of the lake. My buddy Bruce is waving his arms, and I'm like, woo. Trying to do my little dance, and you can see people on the top of the boat who are like, honey, that is not a polar bear. That's some seriously fucked up shit right there. You know, and blood is pouring down, and I'm just, oh, yeah, Bruce is waving, and the boat comes so close, and it turns around, and it keeps going, and it goes right back to Anchorage, and it never stops. It did turn out, just on a side note, that that captain of that boat was prosecuted for not stopping. It is law that you stop for something like that, which he did not. So when I told that story in the hospital later on, let's just say there was a lot of unhappy people about hearing that version. So I'm stuck there, and that's, I can tell you, in my entire lifetime, hands down, easily, that was the only moment, or the closest moment, I can absolutely tell you that I have had to giving up. I knew what 4.5 hours of walking was like. I knew that I had a moment where I started to sit down, and I thought, I'm just going to sit here. You know, I don't want to go anywhere. You know, like, I'm kind of broken at this point. And thankfully, my friend Bruce, God bless him, looked me right in the face for a very brief second. The brief second that he could handle, look at me in the face, and was like, get up, get up, get up. We are walking. You are walking. And I was like, whatever I was mumbling at that time. And so he gets me up, and he walks me to the edge of the trailhead. And then he just looked at me and said, I'm going to ask you one thing. Promise me you will continue to walk. I am running back to town. You just promise me you're going to walk. You know, nothing really much you can say when you're spitting out shards of your former teeth. And so he did. He ran. And, of course, I got lost several times along the trail. And it felt like the longest 4.5 hours of my entire life as I stumbled across the rocky terrain. And then finally, when I got to the end, I could hear the helicopter coming, and I could see people from town who had run the 2.5 miles from town to come to meet me at the where I was about to collapse. So I sat down, and the helicopter came, and the nurse had the same look on her face that Bruce had, which was, why do I have this job? You know, not what I want to be doing today. And so I'm in the helicopter, and then she... This is why there's so many varieties of scars. She says to me, and I knew this question was coming from the moment it happened. She goes, I hate to ask this question while you're in the helicopter, but do you have insurance? To which I, of course, said, no. And then she had that look of like, oh. Yeah, as she's jabbing the IV into my arm. And so the helicopter flew back to Anchorage. And I will tell you that if you're ever, having spent, unfortunately, more than enough time in the ER and other kind of places, the doctors in general will say one of two things to you if you happen to be conscious. Note that, if you happen to be conscious. For those of you who are unconscious, that's, you know, a different story. They'll either tell you, hey, things are going to be fine. You know, like, things are fine. And then there's the second version, which is what he said to me, which is, We're going to do the best we can. We're going to do the best we can. Which essentially at that point means I have no fucking idea what's going to happen to you or what we're going to be able to fix and not fix. And I just remember, for those of you, you know, if you go under and they do the 3, 2, 1, and as they ask you to say, you know, count down from 3, and you're like, 3. And my last memory was, my last thought was, did he just say best I can? And then as I thought, did he just say, I was out and was like, son of a bitch, God, I think he just said best I can. So, you know, I woke up, and what they had initially, I mean, by miracle of all miracles, what they had initially thought would happen and what actually what the surgeon had expected to happen was that I would lose all nerve damage between where it shattered, because the entire jaw shattered. So they put a little, you know, metal thing to put everything together, but they assumed that all of this would just be numb for the rest of my life. And so I remember coming to, and I just thought to myself, this is, you know, I was very, let's just say, bitter. I was very bitter about the entire experience. And the doctor was actually very good. The doctor came to me, and he could see I was a little bit upset, mildly upset, by the events that had happened. And he totally just sort of smacked me around a little bit and was kind of like, listen, you know, this actually could have been way worse. You are actually walking. You know, and the fact that you walked out, you know, you should, I know you don't want to hear it right now, which is like, you're lucky. And I'm thinking, lucky? I have to like redefine what lucky means. Apparently lucky means you can have shit like this happen to you and it's lucky. And I was like, thank you, Zen Buddhist doctor, this is lucky. And I remember, he said this to me, and at this point, I had actually not seen myself. So, you know, when you're there in the hospital room by yourself, I've got my little morphine drip, which I'm just like hitting the morphine drip 24/7. One time of which, like, I didn't think that I was getting enough morphine, so I decided to up myself out of the bed and walk down the hallway with all my little tubes and whatever, screaming, morphine! Morphine! And like the nurse at the station was like, get back in your bed. I will get you more morphine. I'm like, morphine! I'm like, you will not deny me morphine. And so after my morphine episode, I decided to get up and I'm like, I need to see what I look like. It's fair enough. You know, might as well. Need to see what the whole thing, well, why everyone stares at me, you know? So I turned the light on in the bathroom and you know, we're in Berkeley, so I think this is actually safe to confess. You know, I've taken acid. I've seen a lot of crazy things until I saw myself that day. And it was the only time, fundamentally, I actually didn't recognize the person in the mirror. Everything had shifted, was rearranged, was swollen, was disfigured, and I just thought, oh. And then I was convinced to myself in the back of my mind that for the rest of my life, people would always say to themselves, you know, Quentin didn't always look like this. You know, there was like pre-accident Quentin, and then he kind of looks a little differently now. And I was convinced, I had this nightmare in the back of my head that the rest of my life, that it was never going to heal. It was never going to go back to normal. And thankfully it did. And I'm on my second set, or borderline third set of teeth, in case you're wondering. They're like cars. They don't last forever. There is no warranty. And you do have to get them replaced every now and then. And the, you know, the fascinating part about having something like that happen in Alaska is I decided very quickly, after I had hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical debt, that I would go back. And I would go back to that glacier and back to that town, but only on the condition of after I've paid off all of the medical debt. And it took me 10 years to pay off every surgeon, every doctor, the hospital, and all of that. And I went back and I had a stack of the hospital bills and then medical bills. And I got back to Whittier. Now, Whittier literally, I mean, I think I'm kidding. It's maybe 35 people, 40 people. So it's 10 years later, right? I show up, I walk into the general store, and the woman looks at me, who I don't remember at all, and says to me, welcome back. We knew you'd come back. She says to me, totally straight face, we knew you'd come back. You know, and I was just like, You know, totally. Like, and she says, you know, do you need anything? Or what can we do? You know, she goes, are you going back to the glacier? And I was like, yep. She goes, figured. Figured. All right. So I went back and I hiked the same trail again. And I went back and I had this one of those classically dramatic moments where I, you know, like taking a little selfie, being like, what's up? I got like the hospital bills, the glacier in the background. Now, having said that, I didn't touch the glacier this time. I gave the glacier very sort of due respect. I was kind of like, listen, we're good, right? You and I think we, I mean, I did look for some teeth. I just thought I'd look, have a passing glance to see if there's any keepsakes from that. And then at the end, you know, I burned those bills and I was done with it. And now I can actually tell that story with a straight face. I can tell my nature story, which you inspired. And it's, you know, it's interesting, the scars from that, you can't really see sort of anymore where the insert of, where the bar is. But for those of you who have entire sets of fake teeth, those are funny kind of scars that you live with every day. Thank you so much.
If you like this story or would like to tell your own story, come to our next show. Go to our website, spokespbl.org, for more information. Or you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Podcast audio production is by Ian Ratzer at Mercy Park Studios in San Francisco. Podcast coordination is by Sarah Bars. This event was hosted by Jean Goldstein-Plesser. Event coordination is by Rebecca Stevater. And event photography is by Chris Koster. Music for this podcast was by First You Get the Sugar.
Thanks for listening.
And hope to see you soon.
Stay classy. Selling his shares on a company's line. He's gonna send you down to Tampa, Florida.